Welcome back to Meteorology Matters, everyone. We're diving into some lingering impacts from hurricane season.
Yeah, we often talk about the immediate aftermath of a hurricane,
You're right.
But the recovery process can actually drag on for months or even years.
For sure. And today we're going to be focusing on the aftermath of hurricanes Helene and Milton.
That's right.
Talking about the challenges folks are facing and how communities are trying to get back on their feet.
And we're going to dig into some of the systemic issues that can complicate the recovery process, as well as highlight some of those amazing stories of resilience that we're seeing emerge from the affected areas.
So why don't we start in North Carolina?
Okay.
Hurricane Helene hit western North Carolina pretty hard, and there are a lot of residents who are still displaced from their homes.
Yeah. One of the biggest challenges they're facing is the availability of FEMA's Transitional Sheltering Assistance Program.
That's the TSA.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so that program, it was putting folks up in hotels after the storm.
Right.
Sounds like a real lifeline for people.
It was, but now, months later, the number of households using that program has really dropped off.
Really?
Yeah, in early January, over 5,700 households were still relying on the TSA for hotel stays.
All right.
But by February 4th, that number had plummeted to just 762.
Wow, so that's a pretty big drop.
It is.
So does that mean everyone found permanent housing?
Well, it's not quite that straightforward, unfortunately.
Okay.
Some people were able to return to their homes after repairs were done, but others are facing a much tougher situation.
Yeah, so let's actually hear from one of those people.
Okay.
Kevin Moreland is a 63-year-old man from Clyde, North Carolina.
Okay.
His rented home was really badly damaged by Helene, and he was relying on that TSA program.
So he was able to extend his hotel stay through March.
Okay.
But he has a criminal record, and he's found it almost impossible to find a landlord who will rent to him.
Gosh, it's tough. Something from your past could make it so hard to rebuild your life.
Absolutely. And Moreland's case raises some questions about the fairness of housing policies and just the need for more support for people who are trying to turn things around.
It does, for sure.
Yeah.
So was Mr. Moreland able to find a place?
Well, he actually had a camper donated to him.
Wow.
And he's planning to relocate to a more affordable area.
Okay.
His situation, though, really highlights the struggles people face finding stable housing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not just talking about one person here.
Right.
We also heard about Randy Billiott.
Okay.
He's a disabled trucker who was evicted from his apartment after the storm.
He was also relying on the TSA program.
Okay.
Lost his hotel voucher in January, though.
And what happened to him?
Well, he was struggling with his health, just facing so much uncertainty about the future.
Yeah.
He couldn't get clear answers from FEMA, and he actually had to rely on the generosity of strangers.
Really?
Yeah. His neighbors at the hotel actually rallied around him and helped him pay for his room when his voucher ran out.
Oh, wow. It's heartwarming to see that. But it also makes you wonder, why does it have to come to that?
Yeah, it exposes the gaps in the system.
Yeah, it really does. So for folks who are still in need, what's the current status of the TSA program?
Well, Governor Stein actually requested an extension.
Okay.
And FEMA agreed. So the program is going to run until May 26th.
That's good news.
It is. But there are really strict eligibility criteria.
I see.
And a lot of people have been deemed ineligible for various reasons.
Okay. Well, for those listening who might still be struggling with housing in Western North Carolina, are there resources available to them?
There are. And throughout February, there's going to be these resources to recovery events happening in different counties.
Oh, good.
You can connect with county, state, and federal representatives.
Including FEMA.
Including FEMA, yes. And it's a chance to find out about programs you may qualify for and get help with that application process.
That's great. And there's also community engagement markets, right?
Right. They provide free food and medical services and information on recovery assistance.
And what about if people need things like showers, laundry, or bottled water?
You can look for community care station locations.
Okay.
They're open daily in some of those hardest hit communities.
Well, it's really important to remember that recovery takes time.
It does.
And support services are still vital.
Absolutely.
So if you need help, please reach out. Now let's talk about the financial burden that hurricanes place on everyone.
Yeah, the cost of recovery can be really substantial.
Huge.
And it often leads to some tension between utility companies and their customers.
Yeah, let's look at Florida as an example.
Okay.
Regulators there just approved some significant monthly surcharges for customers of Duke Energy and Tampa Electric.
Right. The goal is to help these companies recoup the costs from hurricane recovery.
Okay.
But it also means that consumers are going to be paying more.
So how much more are we talking about?
Well, Tampa Electric customers are going to see an increase of about $20 a month on their bills. And Duke Energy customers will be facing a surcharge of around $32 a month.
Wow, so that's a pretty hefty increase.
It is. And, you know, on top of everything else people are dealing with,
right,
it's led to a real debate about who should ultimately bear the cost of storm recovery.
And what are regulators saying about this?
Well, they've expressed concern about the impact of these surcharges, you know, particularly considering that base rate hikes were already approved last year.
Right.
There's a worry that these rising costs are becoming too much for people to handle.
Yeah, I can see that. So what can be done? Are there any ideas being floated to ease this financial pressure?
Well, there are some folks who argue that utility shareholders should also share in covering the costs of storm recovery.
Yeah, I mean, if the companies are profiting, they should share in the responsibility too, right?
That's the argument.
Makes sense.
Another idea is to actually set limits on how much utilities can spend on storm recovery.
I see.
So that could help lessen the impact on customers' bills.
It's definitely a tough issue with no easy solutions.
Yeah, utilities need resources to restore power. But we also have to consider the financial well-being of the people they serve.
It's all about finding that balance. Now, let's shift gears and talk about another lasting effect of hurricanes Helene and Milton.
Okay.
Unemployment.
Right. These storms didn't just damage property. They disrupted people's lives and their livelihoods.
Absolutely. So we're going to hear from some folks in Florida who are still struggling to get back on their feet financially months after the storms.
We'll explore the challenges they're facing and look at the systems that can make it hard to get the support they need.
Oh, okay.
And we'll also highlight some initiatives that are aimed at addressing those challenges.
Before we dive into those stories, though, let's remind our listeners how to connect with us.
Yes.
For weather updates and expertise, you can follow our meteorologist, Rob Jones.
You can find him on Instagram at meteorologist, on TikTok at TV Meteorologist, and on YouTube, search for Rob Jones Hurricane.
And on his YouTube channel, you can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist, where you can catch up on all our past episodes.
Now, let's talk about Giselle Wiggins. She's a photographer and videographer from Clearwater Beach, Florida.
Okay.
She lost her income after Hurricane Milton because all those beautiful beach scenes she normally captures were gone.
Right.
She applied for disaster unemployment assistance, and even though she was found eligible, she hasn't received any benefits yet.
Oh, wow. And months after the storm, she was evicted from her apartment.
Right.
And now she's couch surfing at a friend's place with all of her belongings in storage.
Yeah, it shows how these storms can have these really long-lasting consequences.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's not just about the immediate impact.
Yeah.
It's about the winds and months that follow.
Right.
And, you know, Giselle's story isn't unique.
No, it isn't.
No.
We also spoke with Elizabeth Saz. She's a single mother who has been struggling with Florida's unemployment system since mid-November.
It sounds like she's been dealing with a lot of red tape.
She describes the Florida Department of Commerce's unemployment system as just incredibly difficult to navigate.
Hmm.
The phone lines are always busy. There's no option to leave a message. And her emails seem to go unanswered.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating when you need help and you can't even reach the people who are supposed to provide it.
Exactly. And it's not just an inconvenience. It's causing real hardship.
Right. Bills are piling up while people wait for assistance.
Exactly. And it brings up some broader criticisms about Florida's unemployment system.
Like what?
Well, the maximum weekly benefit is only $275, which is pretty low compared to other states.
Yeah, that's hardly enough to cover basic expenses for a single person, let alone a family.
And the benefits only last for 12 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Which isn't really enough time to find new work, especially in areas where the economy is still recovering from the storm.
So where does this leave people like Giselle and Elizabeth who are still waiting for benefits? What can be done to make this system more effective and more compassionate?
Those are really important questions, and we're going to dive into some potential solutions in the next part of our discussion. So yeah, it seems like Florida's unemployment system really needs an overhaul.
It does.
People are talking about some solutions like increasing the maximum weekly benefit.
Okay.
And extending the duration of those benefits, especially for people who have been impacted by natural disasters.
Yeah, that makes sense. Giving people more financial breathing room and more time to find work.
Exactly. And you know, it's not just about the numbers. It's about making the system itself easier to use.
Sure.
People need clear information.
Right.
Easy to use online platforms, mm-hmm. responsive customer service, you know.
Right.
The current system is just way too complicated, especially for people who are already under so much stress.
Yeah, it sounds like a complete overhaul is really what's needed to make sure the system actually works for the people who need it.
Exactly. So, you know, we've talked about the human toll and the financial strain, but let's switch gears a bit and talk about the actual physical cleanup.
All right, all that debris removal, the infrastructure, repairs the environmental concerns.
Exactly. It's a massive undertaking.
Huge.
And it can take a long time to complete.
Yeah. It's easy to forget about that part once the immediate danger has passed.
It is. So let's take Buncombe County in North Carolina as an example.
Okay.
One of the hardest hit areas by Helene, just the sheer amount of debris is incredible.
Yeah. Down trees, building materials, vehicles.
It's a logistical nightmare.
It is. Where do you even begin to tackle something like that?
It takes a coordinated effort between local, state, and federal agencies.
Okay.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has been working in Western North Carolina since October.
And how are they doing?
They've made some real progress. As of February 5th, their contractors had collected over 900,000 cubic yards of debris.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is from public rights of way, but there's still a lot more work to do.
What about debris on private property?
That's a bit trickier.
I bet.
Buncombe County has a program for that.
Okay.
But property owners have to apply and get an inspection.
Yeah, I imagine that can be tough for people who are already dealing with so much.
It can be. And as of January 29th, over 445 residential property owners and 40 commercial property owners had applied.
Okay.
So it's a process.
It is, for sure. So beyond the sheer volume of debris, are there any other challenges they're facing in Buncombe County?
Yeah, one big concern is all the debris that ended up in the waterways.
Right. Helene brought a lot of flooding to Western North Carolina.
Exactly. And all that floodwater carried debris into the rivers and streams.
And that's obviously a big problem for the environment.
It is. Waterway debris removal is a top priority, but it's a delicate operation.
Yeah, you don't want to cause further damage.
Right. So they're using a lot of different techniques to protect the environment during cleanup.
Okay.
Like they're using silt fences to prevent pollutants from washing into the water.
Okay.
And they're also taking steps to minimize disturbance to wildlife habitats.
Given. It sounds like they're taking a really thoughtful approach.
They are. One of the things they found is a ton of vehicles in the rivers and streams. Yeah. The floodwaters were so powerful, they just swept them away, cars, trucks, even campers.
Wow. That's incredible.
It is. Contractors are working to get them out of there.
Okay.
As of February 5th, there were still about 80 vehicles left.
Wow. So it's a long process.
It is, but it's important for restoring the ecosystem.
It is, and it's not just about restoring the environment, right?
Right.
It's about rebuilding communities.
Exactly, and that's where the financial side of things comes in again.
Yeah, we talked about the strain on individuals, but whole communities are bearing the cost of rebuilding.
They are, and the North Carolina Treasurer's Office has actually set up a $100 million loan program to help out.
That's fantastic. What can communities use that money for?
All kinds of things, repairing roads and bridges, rebuilding schools and hospitals.
Wow, that's going to be a big help.
It is. Rebuilding takes time and resources.
It does, and collaboration.
Absolutely.
So before we move on, let's remind our listeners how to stay informed about weather events and support recovery efforts.
Yeah, Rob Jones is a great resource. You can find him on Instagram at Meteorologist, on TikTok at TV Meteorologist, and on YouTube, search Rob Jones Hurricane. And on his YouTube channel, you can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, for our last topic today, let's talk about something pretty unexpected that happened as a result of Hurricane Helene.
Okay, this really highlights how interconnected our ecosystems are.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
So Helene brought all that rain and flooding to Western North Carolina, right?
Right.
Well, all that moisture created the perfect conditions for a certain type of fungus to grow.
Fungus? Okay, this is definitely not what I was expecting. What kind of fungus are we talking about?
It's a fungus that affects trees, specifically black walnut trees.
Okay.
And it's associated with a disease called thousand cankers disease.
And how does that disease work?
Well, it's spread by a tiny beetle that carries the fungus.
Okay.
The beetle bores into the bark of the tree and spreads the fungus as it tunnels.
I see.
And the heavy rain and flooding from Helene created a really good environment for these beetles.
So the hurricane actually helped spread this disease.
It's a fascinating example of how interconnected things are in nature.
It is a little unsettling, though.
Yeah.
How serious is this disease? Can it kill trees?
Yeah, it can be fatal.
Oh, wow.
The fungus disrupts the flow of nutrients and water in the tree, and eventually the whole tree can die.
And is there a cure?
Unfortunately, no. So prevention and early detection are really important.
That's a good reminder that we need to pay attention to these subtle changes in the environment after big weather events.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about the impact these hurricanes have had on the tourism industry.
Yeah, tourism is a huge part of the economy. in many coastal areas, and it's very vulnerable to disruptions.
It is. So let's focus on Florida, which relies heavily on tourism.
Okay.
What are some of the biggest challenges they're facing?
Good question.
Well, one of the most immediate impacts is the physical damage to businesses that cater to tourists.
Right. Hotels, restaurants, shops, all that.
Exactly. A lot of those places had to close, at least temporarily, some permanently, which has led to job losses.
It's a real blow to those businesses and the communities that depend on them. What about the tourists themselves? Have these storms scared people away from visiting Florida?
Yeah, a lot of people canceled trips because of safety concerns, travel disruptions, you know.
Makes sense.
And even months later, some areas are still having trouble attracting visitors back.
So it's not just about rebuilding, it's about rebuilding confidence.
Right. Reassuring people that Florida is still a great place to visit.
Yeah. How are they doing that?
They're focusing on marketing and communication, letting people know that Florida is open for business, and highlighting the areas that are ready for visitors.
Okay.
They're also telling stories about the resilience of the state and the people.
Right. Showing that Florida is strong.
Exactly. And they're emphasizing the importance of investing in infrastructure.
Like roads and airports and things like that.
Exactly. It not only helps the tourism industry, but it also improves things for residents.
So everybody wins.
Right. And there's also a push to diversify Florida's tourism offerings.
So going beyond just the beach?
Exactly. Showcasing cultural attractions, historical sites, the food scene, all the different things Florida has to offer.
I like it. It sounds like Florida is taking a really comprehensive approach to recovery.
They are addressing the immediate needs and looking towards the future.
It is inspiring to see how people are working to rebuild their businesses and communities.
It is. It reminds us that even in the face of adversity, there's always hope.
Wow. What a journey.
It has been.
Really insightful look at the long road to recovery after Hurricanes Helene and Milton.
Yeah, we've seen the challenges, the setbacks, but also the incredible resilience of these communities.
For sure. From housing insecurity to unemployment to the financial burden on utility customers and the effects on ecosystems and the tourism industry.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And it's clear that these issues need some serious attention.
They do.
You know, we need to find solutions and work together to build a more resilient future.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important to remember something that you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Behind all these challenges, behind the numbers and the statistics, are real people.
Right.
Whose lives have been turned upside down by these storms.
You know, the stories we heard today from Kevin Moreland, Randy Billiott, Giselle Wiggins, and Elizabeth Says, they're just a glimpse into the struggles that so many people are facing.
Absolutely. And those stories really highlight the need for empathy, for compassion.
Yeah. And for systems that can truly support people in times of crisis.
For sure.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up this episode, I want to talk about what we as individuals can do to make a difference.
Okay.
We've talked about preparedness and understanding risk and community support.
Mm-hmm.
But what about individual action?
Well, we can start by staying informed about weather events.
Okay.
And taking precautions to protect ourselves and our families.
Right.
We can support relief efforts through donations or volunteering or just by spreading awareness.
And I think it's also important to talk about climate change.
Absolutely.
And how it's impacting these extreme weather events.
It's a complex issue, but we can't ignore it.
We can't. And building a more resilient future requires all of us to work together.
It does.
From individuals to communities to governments.
We have the knowledge, the resources, and the technology.
We do. What we need is the will to act.
And we can start today.
We can. By raising awareness, supporting those in need, advocating for change.
We can all contribute to a world that's better prepared for the challenges ahead.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us on this deep dive into the aftermath of Hurricanes Helene and Milton.
We hope you found it informative and thought-provoking.
And remember, we're all in this together.
By working together, we can create a more resilient and sustainable future for everyone.
If you want to learn more about any of the topics we've discussed,
or connect with us,
you can visit our website or find us on social media.
And for all the latest weather updates and insights, be sure to follow meteorologist Rob Jones.
You can find him on Instagram at meteorologist, on TikTok at TV Meteorologist,
and on YouTube, search for Rob Jones Hurricane.
You can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist on his YouTube channel.
Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe and stay informed.